What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, senior NBA insider for HoopsHype.com and the host of the Hoops Hype podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by our Hoops Hype salary cap expert, Yossi Goslin, to break down the top NBA players who become trade eligible pretty soon, starting December 15th. It's usually a time during the NBA calendar where trade talks slowly start to pick up more. And then as you look ahead towards the G League showcase as well, the ball really starts to get rolling a little bit more around this time during the holiday season. And Yossi, I'm always happy to have you join the pod, brother. And I know you got a lot of exciting stuff coming your way personally outside of work. It's a good time heading into 2024. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to get into the official part of trade season. I think I think there's some interesting teams, some interesting players that could be moved over the coming months.
I mean, I think, bro, first and foremost, the team that has some guys that are interesting right off the bat when you look at that December 15th date is the in-season tournament champions, the Los Angeles Lakers. There's a couple of guys there that become trade eligible on the 15th. You got their point guard, D'Angelo Russell. You got Gabe Vincent, who they brought over from Miami. And you could throw Christian Wood in there as well, who they signed in the offseason. Yossi, when I look at D'Angelo Russell, he's been pretty consistent since he returned to the Lakers. He's averaged 17 points, 6 assists. He's shooting 48% overall, 41% on his threes, and he's got an $18.7 million player option for next season. I think certainly if, as I mentioned in my top trade candidates piece for the season, rival NBA executives who spoke with Hoops, I believe that D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura are two potential trade candidates to watch on the Lakers, given their play, given the salaries that they earn. You could look at Gabe Vincent as a guy who signed a 3-year, $33 million contract in free agency, and he's missed all but 4 games this year with a left knee injury. The Lakers have been cautious with him and they've given him more time to heal. I'm told Vincent is hopeful he can return sometime within the next 2 weeks. Fingers crossed for him. I know he certainly played many times while he was injured in Miami. And this is a guy that wants to make good on that big free agent splash that the Lakers had. When you look at the landscape out in LA with this team coming off the in-season tournament championship, what do you see for LA given that some of these guys become trade eligible and then, Rui Hachimura will eventually as well?
You mentioned D'Angelo Russell, and he is playing well this season. You mentioned his numbers. The reason why he's automatically a trade candidate, aside from the salary that the contract they signed him to, the 2-year deal, a pretty short deal, is making $17 million a year, is his playoff disparity. He plays pretty well in the regular season, but then come playoff time last year, those numbers dipped to 13 points per game, 42% from the field, 31% from three, usually from instead of high 30s. So, and then obviously the defensive deficiencies, there were times when he was not playable. So yeah, he's a great regular season player. He'll help the Lakers get there, but I think long run, they want to get players that can be viable for the playoffs. You mentioned Gabe Vincent. The Lakers keep falling for Heat guards that overperform, and Gabe Vincent's been injured, but definitely has some reminders of what happened with the Kendrick Nunn experience in his first year. Hopefully Gabe Vincent comes back soon, but at the same time, I'm sure the internally they're not feeling too good about that signing at the moment. And when you mention who the Lakers are targeting, we'll just get to the obvious target, Zach LaVine. Everyone is waiting to count down the days for when the Lakers have enough trade eligible players so they could potentially trade for Zach LaVine. It's been like a month since the reporting came out that he's open to get traded. And I listed a couple teams, and mostly some teams like Detroit, Orlando, that need some offense. It was a very short list, and obviously the Lakers were mentioned. And now, as we are further away from that, I feel like the Lakers might be the only team that kind of makes sense for him at this point if he's going to get traded this year. So the question is, how much are they going to require from the Lakers or any other team to trade him? And if it's not if they're not getting the type of value they want, are they comfortable just getting off that money, maybe taking just a little bit of value? I saw reports that the Bulls are interested in Austin Reeves, but the Lakers wouldn't do that. And yeah, if you're the Lakers, I don't think I'd want to go from Reeves to LaVine at all. But, you know, what's just like a little, I've been thinking about it more and more. Maybe there's something where they get LaVine. Maybe they could also get a guy like Alex Caruso. I think that's a guy that really raises their championship ceiling over most of the players I just talked about. Would the Lakers consider a type of package where they get LaVine and Caruso, but then have to give up Reeves, but they don't have to give up any picks? Maybe they also get off Gabe Vincent in the process. I think that's an interesting scenario. That they definitely need a point of attack defender like Caruso to defend some of the better ball dominant players in the league. So that's the main thing with the Lakers. I think it's just obvious that as we get to trade season, will Zach LaVine get traded to the Lakers? Will probably be their dominant trade target.
Now that's some food for thought. I mean, when you bring up all these names, I think certainly. I mean, look, I know Jeannie Buss is a big fan of Austin Reeves, and this was a guy that. It's kind of a developmental story for them where they got him coming as an undrafted guy, and they take pride in that. I know that, certainly Laker fans were saddened to see Alex Caruso go. And with Zach LaVine, being that he's rep by Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, obviously anytime that's the case for representation, his clients always get linked to the Lakers, and he certainly has a few of them now on the team. It's also interesting that since LaVine has been out, Chicago has, in the short term, won in his absence. I don't know if that's going to move the needle more for them to try to make a trade with him, earlier than the deadline, but certainly there's other players that, like you touched on, would need to be included, whether it's the Lakers or somewhere else, that you have to wait for certain dates, whether it's December 15th, January 15th, to get a deal done. But Zach's, inflammation in his foot, causing him to miss more time, certainly is, it's interesting how the timelines would seemingly add up at that point. For the Lakers, I think in that sense, they'd have to decide if having Zach LaVine as the clear number three guy and given his salary is worth it, bringing him closer to home, or do you try to do it more by committee like they did last year with guys like Austin Reeves, et cetera. That trade scenario you brought up is an interesting one. I certainly food for thought. No question there. I think I wonder how Laker fans would feel about that if they ended up doing like a move like that. I wouldn't call it, I don't know if I would call it a quote unquote blockbuster, but that would be a needle moving trade, certainly for both sides.
Yeah. I'm sure the Lakers and all Laker fans would prefer a DeRozan Caruso package versus LaVine.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting with the Bulls because they almost make it seem like they want to keep DeMar DeRozan, and DeMar's the older player, and you got Vooch, who's older as well, into his, 30s, and it's almost like, well, what's the timeline for Chicago in that sense. Because of those guys, LaVine is the younger of the youngest of them. And, you know, it's an interesting scenario because you look at Arturis Karnisovas and Bulls management, and they sold, you know, ownership previously when they had Lonzo Ball that this team was going to be good. Now, the Lonzo Ball injury was unforeseen, and you can't really predict, you couldn't have predicted that that would happen, but certainly the ceiling has been lowered for the group. So I don't know. To me, I just find it interesting that, you know, if you're a team and you're almost trying to keep DeMar and you have Vooch, you'd almost be more in a win now mode, which again has been the sentiment that rival executives around the league have gotten. You know, when I wrote the top trade candidates piece recently on hoopshype.com, I had touched on that they're looking not necessarily for straight draft capital. They're looking for players that can help them win now and maybe a pick down the line if they can add to their cupboard. But it's an interesting strategy because I don't know how much higher their ceiling would be if they just tweak Zach LaVine or not. I know they've been on a short-term role lately with him out, but as far as long-term sustainable success, I don't see that with them. And like, look, they're going to have decisions to make on their big three. And eventually there's another team coming up that's going to have decisions to make. And it's the
I'll just say one thing on what you were just saying about the Bulls is, yeah, I've seen the reports that they are motivated to keep winning, staying good as best they can. But I do also think that they might have a motivation to lose in the short term. They do owe the Spurs a pick next year, but it's top eight protected. Right now, they're within that top eight range based on their season performance. There could be a decision. It would be possible that they make a decision. Let's take a step back for a couple of years, keep the pick for a little, try to keep the pick. It's protected for like maybe another year beyond that, I think. And then try to get good from there.
I mean, full disclosure, if I was in Chicago scenario, I would rebuild. That's just my opinion. I don't think they're anywhere near certainly a championship contender, let alone, you know, top six playoff team without having to hit the play-in tournament.
Right. And the protection, like, basically would let them keep their pick. Like, they could, it's top eight protected through 2027. I just checked. They could bottom out for really that whole time and probably keep that pick. That's from the from getting DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, and I mean, I the one thing I would say is you'd have to sell management on that. And we've seen previously regimes such as like when the Orlando Magic got rid of Vucevic, Aaron Gordon, Evan Fournier, and they completely rebuilt. They were able to sell ownership on that. And I think Chicago would have to be able to do that. Again, I haven't gotten that sense yet, but I think a lot of people around the league wouldn't give them an issue if they did. I think you would look at that logically and say, well, it could make sense, but you got to get ownership's approval. But that's an interesting point too. You touch on with the San Antonio pick. This draft is a weaker draft coming up this year. I mean, I've talked to plenty of scouts and executives on it, and we will have, spoiler alert, we will have coming up in the near future a new Hoops Hype aggregate mock draft, so be on the lookout for that. But this draft class is not that good, so I don't know if that's going to motivate them or move the needle, but it's something to keep an eye on. And, I mean, we touched on Chicago having to make decisions on a lot of their guys, but another team that is going to have some decisions to make in the nearer future, I would say, is the Cleveland Cavaliers. And one of the guys on their roster that becomes trade eligible December 15th is Caris LeVert. So essentially, if the Cavaliers can make a win now move to upgrade the roster to a title contender, they'd do it. But it's uncertain whether that'll materialize itself. And LeVert's got a 2-year, $32 million contract. That's a nice tradable salary. He's a versatile player. And a guy that's pretty liked around the league. It's just always a question of whether he can stay healthy for Karras. And in a bigger picture, Yossi, and you know this as well as anybody as a salary cap expert, Cleveland's going to have to make big financial decisions given the upcoming luxury tax bills if Donovan Mitchell re-signs on a max contract down the line. Because if the Cavaliers re-sign Mitchell with a max contract, Jared Allen could become more expendable down the line and they're going to have to make other roster decisions. But for the time being right now, Karras is a guy that last year was mentioned in trade talks. And ultimately, if they are going to make an upgrade on the wing, you would figure that Karras would be a guy that would be involved. Now, again, and I mentioned it now, I touched on a little bit in the top trade candidates piece. It's got to be a guy that's going to really help them move the needle and win now because they do like Karras. They certainly like Jared Allen as well. So when you look at Karras for Cleveland, Yossi, I'm curious your thoughts on him and the chances that he gets moved before the deadline.
So I've been taking a deeper look at Cleveland and their season because they're pretty interesting. They started the season with several injuries to a lot of players, got off to a 4-6 start, and they've been 9-3 since over their last 12 games. They're still a top 10 defense like last year, but they've been struggling on offense. They're 24th, and even in that run over their past 12 games, they're 23rd in that span. So I'm trying to really understand what's going on. I might be missing some things, but one thing is their bench. See that their bench, one of the worst scoring benches, they're 24th in points per game, minus 2.6 in the net rating, last in offensive rating, their bench players. So I suppose that's one of their bigger indicators of what's going on with their offensive struggles. So you talk about what can the Cavs do, some type of big trade. That's hard to say because they have this starting lineup they seem pretty well set with it. Their top 1-5, Max Strus, has been really good for them this year. He's definitively their fifth starter. He's brought a much needed element of shooting without really taking away from their defense. And so Karis LeVert is an obvious trade candidate. He comes off the bench, does not really project to ever close with the Cavaliers when they're fully healthy. But he's also been really their most reliable guard lead ball handler off the bench. Rubio's not playing. Ty Jerome's been injured. They have Craig Porter Jr. has been pretty good, but when it looks, he hasn't really been playing that much recently after that really nice stretch he had last month. So you can try to, I just don't know if they would trade LeVert with one of their starters, like Max Strus, for example, for an even bigger upgrade. I don't know if that works. They don't really have any picks to trade. So I'm not sure there's something there that really raises their ceiling more so than them trying to upgrade their bench and improve it. Now, look, maybe a lot of their bench issues just improve over time. But they do have some other, like I said, there's Ty Jerome, they have George Niang. Those are two other guys that will become trade eligible coming this week. I would say that if the Cavs do something, it just probably more smaller scale moves to try to reshuffle their bench and get pieces that can improve on offense.
Yeah, I mean, they got a lot riding on this season because, the clock on Donovan Mitchell is going to start to tick and his looming free agency coming up down the line. Certainly a lot of key decisions they got to make. They seem to have hit on a former Heat player. I know you touched on Gabe Vincent a little earlier and how that's worked out for the Lakers. It certainly looks like it's been a rewarding signing for Cleveland so far with Max Strus.
As far as the Donovan Mitchell stuff, I still feel it's a little too early for that. Long-term, I'm not a big fan of the fit. I don't think that a team could really win at the highest levels having two small guards in your best lineup. So I do feel like whether it's his decision, that will need to change. And if they can get like another big versatile wing with the player in his stead, I think that should, or Garland, whichever, you know, just between one of them, I think that would raise their ceiling a lot. That's easier said than done. I don't know what type of player that could be that becomes available, but in the long run, I'm sure that will be something that will happen, especially that could, you know, develop, especially if the Mitchell trade speculation or just future speculation in general gets louder.
Yeah. I mean, look, Cleveland obviously is going to want to keep Donovan Mitchell, and they'll have time down the line where they can decide at any point whether they want to move him or not. Obviously this year, they're going to try to be as competitive as they can be with this core and the continuity that they have and go from there down the line. You could always wait until the trade deadline of his expiring contract season if you want. There's always going to be a team interested, especially when you can acquire bird rights, given teams that don't have cap space. But obviously at that stage, the return would be less. So that's something Cleveland's going to have to figure out. But, you know, Donovan Mitchell is a star in his own right, and a team that would look to, I would say another team out there that would look for either a starting caliber upgrade and is always in the market for a star caliber player is the Houston Rockets. And as I had mentioned in my top trade candidates piece, Houston will look to continue to upgrade the roster, and they've got the tradable contracts of Victor Oladipo, Jock Landale, Jeff Green, and they got future draft picks as well. So for December 15th, you've got Jeff Green and Jock Landale that become trade eligible as far as this topic goes. And I mean, look, Green has been a great veteran locker room leader, and he can still contribute on the floor for Houston. Separately, with Alperen Şengün's emergence this season, Jock Landale's role hasn't been what it was projected to be when he was signed. However, his contract was designed specifically to be a trade asset. And I mean, Yossi, when you look at these guys and just the Rockets situation, what do you foresee in your crystal ball as we get ready for not only the new year ahead in 2024, but obviously the trade deadline coming up in February?
You know, I really don't know what the Houston Rockets, how high they're willing to go or like what their plan is in the trade deadline. There's a lot of different things that could happen. Houston, they've been pretty good this year. They're in play-in range right now. Fourth ranked defense, 3.0 net rating, 10-9 start. One of their biggest issues is their home away disparity. They only have one win on the road. I believe that's the worst away record in the league right now. But I would imagine that's going to improve. And they played surprisingly well against good competition. They're 8-6 against teams above 500. They've beaten the Nuggets three times already. So, I mean, that's, you know, whether injuries or not, I think that's still pretty impressive. Now with the Rockets, Udoka plays his starters a lot, like pretty heavy minutes. It feels like he's really maximized this roster, to its abilities. And I suppose the question is like, what do they want to do in this trade deadline? Because they're clearly pretty good, and they're going to want to try to get better, try to break above the play-in range. You mentioned they have Jeff Green, they have Jock Landale. Those guys, they have pretty decent sized salaries that they can use for salary matching. But what exactly do they want to do? Do they want to get some more bench pieces that can help ease the load for their starters? I remember when the Rockets, they were like pretty in it for to sign Brooke Lopez. It didn't work out. I think fortunately that ended up being a good thing for them, because then Şengün would have been marginalized. But do they still want to get another rim protector type player to back up Şengün? They don't really have that type of rim protector off the bench right now or at all on the roster. Or do they want to do something bigger? Do they want to upgrade like their starting lineup? They've got all their first round picks. They could trade multiple picks. They could trade some swaps. do they want to go all in on a starter? Would they consider something like moving some of their young players to add another, like just another starter, or even the next available all-star if that becomes available? I just mentioned that because I do think they have the pieces to get that type of a trade done. And between Green, Landale, and I'd also mention Victor Oladipo, who he's already trade eligible, but he will actually be, the Rockets could aggregate him 2 days after December 15th, after the, you know, the unofficial start of trade season. You can take, between those three guys, you could take back up to $35 million. You could trade for just about anybody. So if they do want to swing for that type of all-star, if that player becomes available, they could. So I just don't know what direction they want to do. I would guess that if that the highest ceiling opportunity becomes available, they'll probably go for it, explore it. But we'll see. We'll see what actually becomes available. And at the worst, I would imagine they'll at least fortify their bench a little more.
You know, you talk about fortifying a bench. Just to circle back on the Bulls for a second, again, with Chicago's future direction a little bit uncertain, it's unclear at this time, but you talk about guys that could hold the value for playoff contenders that could fortify any bench on a playoff team. I wondered about Javon Carter and Torrey Craig on the Bulls, because I do think those guys would have value. And, you know, I remember, like, in the offseason, Minnesota was also looking at Javon Carter in addition to Chicago. Torrey Craig had a number of teams as well, because he's a good role player. But those were just two guys that kind of, as you're talking about, you know, bench guys and team, you know, like a team like Houston or someone else trying to fortify their bench, just two names that popped into my mind that I think would hold value if they were on the market and teams would be after.
Yeah. If the Bulls end up trading a lot of their best players, their starters, LaVine, DeRozan, Caruso, then eventually that'll probably also extend to some of their bench players. Javon Carter there's just so many guards on the Bulls right now that he's been in the rotation, but he definitely feels like he can have a bigger role elsewhere if given the opportunity. Torrey Craig's on a minimum deal. Just, yeah, another guy you could just easily plug in for many other teams. Just about because he's on a minimum salary, it's very easy to just acquire him. So with their direction being uncertain, as you mentioned, yeah, I would definitely monitor those two guys. They could definitely be on the move if they enter that rebuild.
Are there any other bench guys you're looking at, you know, Eastern or Western Conference, that stick out to you as kind of guys on that December 15th trade eligibility calendar date that you could see as a trade candidate?
So the one team I'm interested in seeing what they do are the Denver Nuggets. So the Nuggets, they have their starting five. It's one of the best, if not the best, starting five in the league. And then they have a lot of nice young players coming off the bench. Not a lot of consistency, but on a given night, a certain player could step up. But looking, and that's good for the regular season, but looking long term, they did lose Bruce Brown. They did lose Jeff Green. I can't really say they've replaced those guys. And it'll probably not, it won't matter too much just because they have their top guys. Those guys are going to play, but I do think they need like another guy or two that they could reliably depend on in the playoffs. It's just hard to see who on this Nuggets team you can really see like getting consistent minutes, being as impactful as they need them to be. So then I look at so the player I'm looking at is Reggie Jackson, because he's makes the most money on the roster besides their starters. They re-signed him to a 2-year deal, making $5 million this year. He waived his implicit no trade clause. So he would have had veto rights on the trade this season since he re-signed on a 1+1, but he waived it. which tells me the Nuggets re-signed them with, you know, like a strong, not so much an intention, but like if the opportunity came to trade him, that definitely played into re-signing him. And he's been pretty good. He's had that really crazy game against the Clippers. He's been really good while Jamal Murray's been gone. But again, once we're in the playoffs, they're going to play Jamal Murray. I'm not sure Reggie Jackson would even factor in too much in the playoffs. So if they can, package Reggie, maybe another player who has a decent salary like Zeke Nnaji, and you can get back like a $10 million or so player that is like their definitive sixth man. Just try to get another veteran that they could really depend on and play extend. They can know for sure will play extended minutes in the playoffs. That's something I'd monitor. I know a lot of these guys have played pretty well, but I have to imagine the Nuggets are definitely going to be trying to identify players that like they don't. It doesn't have to be Bruce Brown necessarily. I think they got very lucky that they got him and he ended up playing just as well as he did. But they just got to get another guy in there that like a little more size, I would say, that they can have in the playoffs.
You know, you talk about Reggie Jackson. It's interesting if you look at his starter versus reserve splits. I mean, when this guy's been a starter for the Nuggets, filling in, you know, when Jamal Murray was out, he'd average 16 points and about 5 assists, shoot like 54% from the field, 44% from 3. When he comes off the bench, those numbers go to 9 points, 3.5 assists, and the shooting splits are 42% from the field and 35% from 3. So obviously come the playoffs, you know, you're hoping Jamal Murray and that starting unit is healthy. But he is an intriguing backup option and a spot starter kind of guy. You know, as you look around the league, another guy I feel like that's kind of taking advantage of, that could take advantage of an opportunity to play more with the guy injured. I look at the Dallas Mavericks and I look at Seth Curry because of Kyrie Irving's injury. He's a guy that could get more playing time with Kyrie out now. We don't have a timeline yet on Irving, but he's a guy that technically becomes eligible to be traded December 15th. Teams are always looking for more shooting. He signed a 2-year, $8 million deal. It's non-guaranteed for next season. Curious your thoughts on him and if you had anything else on the Mavericks big picture.
They have a couple other guys that become trade eligible. Overall, they've had a pretty good season. A lot of their best wins, like most of their wins, have not been against great competition. I've looked at their schedule. It is going to get a little tougher over the next few coming months. But, you know, I would say if they do need some more versatility on the wing, they've gotten a lot out of Derrick Jones so far. Tim Hardaway has been playing really well, been shooting extremely well. Unfortunately, Josh Green is injured. He's been solid. But the Mavs, over recent years, they've haven't had much of a problem having a lot of undersized guards. They've got Luke and Kyrie in their lineup. They got a lot of other guys, Seth Curry, Josh Green, Exum, Hardy. They don't mind having lots of undersized guards and playing them up higher. But for the playoffs, I do think they do need to trade some of these guards, if possible, try to get some more wing size depth, some more versatility on the wing, especially defensively. I don't think they've truly replaced Dorian Finney-Smith yet, as nice as Grant Williams has been. So if they can, these players are very hard to come by, but if they can just get another wing guy, I think that would help them, especially come playoff time.
Yeah, Dallas misses Dorian Finney-Smith. I mentioned that they had, you know, in my trade candidates piece, that they had at least tried to see if maybe there's a way they can get him back at some point, but I don't know if that's in the cards. But The only other guy I thought of, given Memphis's struggles this season, was, you know, if Derrick Rose wanted to try to chase a ring and a team needed a backup point guard spot, he's still shown he's got some gas left in the tank. And, I've always admired his ability to kind of redefine his career after he got hurt with the Bulls and have such longevity. Just curious if you, when you look at Memphis's situation and with Derek in particular, if where does he fall on the trade candidate spectrum for guys that could be moved on December 15th in your eyes?
He's a trade candidate in the sense just that Memphis will need to clear a roster spot pretty soon. I think it's going to be this month when John Morant's suspension ends. I haven't really kept track, but once with the suspension coming up, they're going to have to clear a roster spot. Just they're already at 16 guys. I think Biombo, who's their only non-guaranteed player, I think they'll keep him, especially because they signed him to $5 million salary, which is a pretty solid movable salary in a trade. If you look at some of the other guys, I haven't seen their rotations in like the past like two or so, three games, but I know there's some other guys that not playing as much, like John Conchar, Kenneth Lofton Jr. Who else am I thinking of? I mean, those are the main two guys that are like, I suppose, have not been playing despite being healthy. So they're going to have to make a move of some kind. I would imagine worst case they cut maybe Lofton just because he's making a minimum salary. I don't think he has much guaranteed money beyond this season. But and then Rose, he's got a two-year minimum deal, player option next year. So I think he doesn't necessarily have any positive value. So I don't think they might have to give up an asset to get off of him. But I know that part of the reason they signed him was because they just wanted another veteran in the locker room with all the issues that went on last year. They want a veteran there. And so I would guess they keep him. You never know what's going to happen. Like I don't think anyone expected John Morant to get suspended again. Hopefully doesn't happen again, but with all the injuries, especially to the backcourt, Rose is honestly pretty valuable to them right now. So most likely I think they keep him for the reasons I mentioned, but yeah, they're going to have to make a decision pretty soon on someone with Morant about to come back.
Yeah. Biombo is one of their few big men. I think, you know, maybe Kenneth Lofton Jr. is a name to keep an eye on there. John Conchar has been a name that's, you know, a trade candidate as well when it comes to Memphis. So certainly.
And then, Jalen Noel has been playing pretty good. They're yep. actually at 17 guys when you consider, when you factor in him.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because, I suppose they might not be able to keep him either with their roster crunch.
Yeah, or they make a move. They've got some decisions to make, certainly.
Right.
Is there anybody else around the league you're looking at with this December 15th date looming that could have some guys that could be trade candidates?
The only other team I would keep an eye on are the Suns.
Mm.
So Frank Vogel, he's done a very good job with this team with all the injuries to their stars. And in this time, the first 20 games or so, he's figured out more or less his 9-10 man rotation. And now that they know who they like, they also know who they could potentially move to trade, try to get an upgrade. So a couple guys that become trade eligible, Bol Bol, Chimezie Metu, Damian Lee, who's injured. Lee, I'm not sure how he'll factor in once he comes back, but if they want, if they don't really, if fully healthy, he's not going to play, maybe they look to move him. Those guys, they make their cap hits are in like the $2 million range. Maybe you could combine some of them, try to get a slightly more expensive player, clear a roster spot to try to get someone else later. Just another team to monitor. Maybe they do something small scale with some of their out of rotation minimum guys.
Now, that's an interesting scenario. I mean, they're certainly trying to go all in now to win a title. Obviously, Brad Beal is going to be the X factor for them. We'll see. Still waiting on that big three for Phoenix, and we'll equally be waiting to see how much the trade meter moves as we get to that December 15th date and the G League showcase. And before you know it, the calendar's going to flip to 2024. Appreciate you joining me as always on the pod, brother.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on anytime.
You got it, my man. And I also want to thank everybody else for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops High Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, we recently had Franz Wagner on, got coaches, Jamal Mosley, Steve Clifford, others. You got executives, media members as well. You can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're following Yossi too. He's at Yossi Goslin, YOSSIGOZLAN. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.